So I wanted to acknowledge my dear friend and colleague, Rebecca Hasso-Aguilar. One of the great privileges of being on the planet for a while is that you realize that as a teacher, the relationship between a student and a teacher becomes teacher and student, and that's been the case with both Rebecca and Jose, who will be presenting later. So I just wanted to give my sincere thanks to Rebecca. Much of what I'm going to present is actually her primary work that was involved in her dissertation on struggles against neoliberal policies in Latin America, and her continuing work as an activist with the Morena struggle in Mexico, which I'll talk about. So we've reached a point in the history of our planet that, in my opinion and the opinion of many others, is at a very crucial historical junction. Capitalism as a world economic system has actually reached a stage of crisis that there's not only a fear of collapse, but a tremendous opportunity that exists currently to move beyond the oppressive structures of capitalism to a different type of system. And one of my purposes today is to point that out and to try to encourage all of us to think that through in terms of what we are going to do as individuals as these opportunities continue to arise and deepen. So we've reached a point at which public health and health services have played an important role during the rise of empire and during its subsequent decline. And conditions that we're facing now actually have changed so that a vision of a world without empire has actually become part of an imaginable future. Latin America has become an especially fertile ground for resistance against neoliberal policies, and in light of the previous group of presentations, I'll try to define that in just a couple of minutes. Resistance against neoliberal policies that have favored privatization and cutbacks in public services, but also for the emergence of alternative policies that are not based on the neoliberal model. In addition to these struggles against neoliberalism, groups in several countries have actually moved to create alternative models of public health and health services. And these efforts, especially in Latin America, have begun to move beyond the historical patterns that we're accustomed to that have been fostered by capitalism and imperialism. We've actually just briefly had some recent publications, including a book that actually Rebecca contributed two chapters to and is now actually available in Spanish as well. A recent article in the Annals, in the Annual Review of Sociology, but wanted to just emphasize this issue of Monthly Review, the independent socialist magazine published in the United States, on the new imperialism, globalized monopoly finance capital, which I highly recommend, and which has two of our articles, including the article that this talk is based on. So we've selected countries that have not gone through a violent revolution, as in the case of Cuba, because actually, at this point in history, the nonviolent path has been predominating in recent popular struggles that have focused on imperialism and health. All the struggles that I'm going to describe today actually are still in process. They're in a process of dialectical change, and they continue to transform toward more or less favorable conditions. So these are not static situations that I'm going to describe and analyze. But all of these situations do show a common resistance to empire and a common goal of public health systems that are grounded in solidarity rather than profitability. Just as background regarding neoliberalism, in brief, consistent with the definition in the last session, Neoliberalism is an ideological framework that organizes a number of economic policies that have reinforced the capitalist world economic system since about 1980. It seeks to assert the superiority of the market over the state and aims to drastically reduce the role of the state in the economy and to favor policies of austerity, of fiscal discipline, of deregulation, of privatization, and dismantling of the welfare state. It's led to a massive transfer of resources from the public to the private sector internationally and nationally in many countries of the world, reduction or elimination of the safety net based in the public sector, and a worsening of social and economic inequalities worldwide. So, as I said, Latin America has become a fertile ground for resistance against these developments, and we're going to analyze some popular struggles in which we've actually participated ourselves, more Rebecca than myself, actually, although I've been involved less than she has in these countries. And this work conveys a different picture from the one we're used to regarding the historical relationship between imperialism and health, that is, a diminishing tolerance for the public health policies of imperialism and a growing demand for public health systems grounded in solidarity rather than profitability. And most important, the participation of common citizens in social issues that are usually discussed and decided by political and economic elites. As one Bolivian in Rebecca's work told her, people have seized the right to decide on matters of lo público, which is very difficult to translate, at least for me. That is, to participate in decisions about the nature of public life and the public sector. So first I'll describe briefly these developments in El Salvador, which involves resistance against the privatization of health services. And basically, in the 1990s, the World Bank, as it has done in many countries, proposed a structural adjustment program in El Salvador that involved the privatization and reduction of the public health sector, closure of public hospitals and clinics, and so forth. And there was actually massive resistance against this that developed among health workers, both professional and non-professional, leading to a series of mobilizations and strikes that actually turned out to be successful. And many people in El Salvador were surprised by the success, but it's endured. The privatization process was actually reversed, and this led to the election in 2009 of Mauricio Funes as president, representing the political arm of the Farabundo Martí National Liberation Front, whose military wing had been involved in the civil war in El Salvador for many years. Dr. Maria Isabel Rodriguez returned from exile at that point as the National Minister of Health. Maria is in Latin America a legendary figure who has fought for improved public health systems throughout Latin America. And she returned actually in her 80s as Minister of Health. And in 1914, succeeding Mauricio Funes, was elected Salvador Sanchez Serén, who was actually a former guerrilla leader with the FMLN, who won the election for president. And the Ministry of Health continues to initiate even more initiatives to strengthen the public health sector in health services. In addition, a very interesting development is the Salvador Allende movement of health professionals in El Salvador, which is taking a role of constructive criticism and relationship to the current government in advocating for improved community-based services. As a result of this, San Salvador was selected as the site of the last International Congress of the Latin American Social Medicine Association, which is actually a group that I strongly recommend to you, inspirational group involving thousands of people actually like us who are struggling for a better public health system and for a better world. At this Congress, there were thousands of people who participated, and I just wanted to show these photos. This is Mauricio Funes, who is actually a young journalist, was elected to president as president in 2009. This is actually a fairly recent photo of Maria Isabel Rodriguez, who is now in her 90s and is still very active, including a very active role at the conference in San Salvador. And this is the current president, Salvador Sanchez Cerén, who actually participated actively in the Social Medicine Congress as president of El Salvador last year, which kind of I wanted to communicate, just if you could imagine a situation in which the president of your country participated in your Social Medicine Congress because he thought it was important enough to do so. So that's the kind of environment that exists. And by no means is San Salvador a perfect situation. Many issues still going on, including violence, gangs, and so forth, but many, many advances have happened. The next is the situation in Bolivia, which is related to resistance to the privatization of water, a key theme in public health, and in my opinion, a much underrated theme in terms of its importance, because the future of access to clean, publicly accessible water supplies is a tremendous threat worldwide. It's been called blue gold by people working in the field, and tremendous pressures to privatize water. So what had happened in Bolivia was that for thousands of years, water supplies have actually been controlled by indigenous communities throughout the country under customs and uses and customs, usos y costumbres, where irrigators were designated by local communities were responsible for constructing, maintaining, and operating the water infrastructure, which was essentially free. And what happened is that the World Bank in Bolivia proposed to privatize Bolivia's water supplies. And their contracts were actually signed with two multinational corporations, but especially with Bechtel, based in San Francisco, to participate in this. And so within a period of about 6 months, much of the rural water supply that had been for literally thousands of years run by local communities was then privatized, with actually the conversion then to a monetary system so that people actually had to pay money for the water, for their own community-based water supplies. And there was what was called a tarifazo, a huge increase in water bills that occurred. This actually led to a type of revolution, which was called the War of Water, which started in the province of Cochabamba and then became a national struggle. Because of this resistance to the privatization of water, the whole political fabric of Bolivia changed. And so in 1905 and then subsequently, Evo Morales, the first indigenous president of Bolivia, was elected, the second indigenous president in the Western Hemisphere after Benito Juarez in Mexico. And under the Morales government, there have actually been a number of processes of democratic processes and participation that have been very novel and have led actually to a kind of a continuing dialectical struggle that's still going on around such issues as the use of natural resources, in particular the extraction of natural gas, which has been a source of redistribution of income and wealth in Bolivia on the positive side, but also has a negative side, which has wound up being resisted by part of the indigenous community. At the ministry level, there are processes of interaction with local communities, social movements, social organizations, and also academics with expertise, not only in water, but in some of the other areas that I mentioned. And the theme here is what's called control social, which literally means social control, but what it means in this context is a type of co-management between government and civil society, where government isn't operating strictly on a model of elite decision-making, but rather involves broad-based community participation. So this is just the House of Cards of Bechtel, which includes not only privatization of water, but a very heavy investment in disaster capitalism in Iraq and elsewhere. And this is just a famous photo of Evo Morales. And this is actually what he tries to present as the leader. The new Bolivian constitution is remarkable in many ways, in that it prioritizes the rights of Mother Earth as the number one priority in the national constitution. And the health system and the health education system are actually getting reconstructed following the principles of this new constitution. The last of many examples that we could choose is the coming to power of social medicine in Mexico City. And this is a particularly important example, in our opinion. It basically involves a vision of health services and public health from a progressive standpoint of Latin American social medicine. In the year 2000, there was a very interesting and important election that happened that in Mexico City led to the victory of the Party of the Democratic Revolution, with Andres Manuel López Obrador becoming governor of the federal district, which has a population of about 20 million people, versus the national election being won by, for the first time in a century, being won by a party not the traditional party, but a center-right party led by Vicente Fox, later Felipe Calderón, and then most recently in the election back to the PRI, led by Enrique Peña Nieto. Now, in Mexico City, the point that I wanted to focus on was that Asa Cristina Laurel, who was one of the key leaders in Latin American social medicine, actually was appointed by AMLO, that is López Obrador, as Secretary of Health in Mexico City. And she, with AMLO's support, that is Andrés Manuel López Obrador, it's short in Mexico, designated by AMLO, this led to a major expansion of public services and institutions, food, medications, and pensions. The financing of this actually came from reduced administrative costs in the Mexico City government and a reduction of corruption. AMLO frequently said the reason that we can afford to do this is the government isn't robbing you anymore. Now, there were highly contested elections in Mexico nationally in 2006, again in 2012. Actually, I could go on at some length about this, but essentially the same forces that manipulated the elections of George W. Bush twice, including the specific public relations firm that coordinated the corruption in Florida and Ohio, actually was involved in both of these elections in Mexico City. So there was tremendous evidence of corruption leading to close losses of AMLO in terms of the national presidency. But this dialectic continues in Mexico. There's been what was called the legitimate government of Mexico, which is a parallel government in which AMLO was president and Cristina Laurel was Secretary of Health for the country. And most recently, this has become a Morena, the movement of national regeneration. So this is a process that is continuing with a great deal of struggle and dialectic change in Mexico. This is a photo of Asa Cristina Laurel and of AMLO. So, just to summarize, these struggles in Latin America confirm core principles of public health: the right to health care, the right to water and other components of a safe environment, and the reduction of illness-generating conditions such as inequality and related social determinants of ill health and early death. Regarding activism, which is something that concerns all of us, what this shows is that activism, with some degree of success, seeks alternatives to neoliberalism and privatization, encourages broader participation and solidarity, and most importantly, rejects traditional political forms, especially reliance on the form of electoral politics and the emphasis on other methods of political activism in addition. The challenge also is to work against the dominant ideologies that justify so much of the problems that we have now, in particular the market-based ideologies that have justified neoliberalism. And these strategies then try to extend what have been called counter-hegemonic spaces for broader social change. The goal of these social movements is not simply to win, but more importantly, to encourage public debate and the raising of level of political consciousness and activation. So this new consciousness then rejects the inevitability of empire and fosters a vision of medicine and public health that's constructed around principles of justice rather than commodification and profitability. And as the era of empire passes, we believe that no other path will resolve our most fundamental aspirations for healing. Thanks very much.
We can take one or two questions now if you care to, and then I'm going to cut you off because we want to hear from our other speakers as well. So are there any hot topic burgers that you want to throw at Howard?
Have you thought about translating some of this
Well, you know, ironically, a lot of what has been talked about in sessions of this caucus here is very similar to what has been going on in Latin America. In fact, I pointed this out actually at the Socialist Caucus meeting on Sunday, which reviewed the history of the Socialist Caucus. And I would encourage, by the way, some of the younger folks who are here in this session to consider taking part in leadership of the caucus, because these sessions, as Martha pointed out at the last session, not only provide an emotional home, so to speak, but are really important in terms of trying to figure out the answers to those questions. So, you know, what the main directions in the United States that are going on that need to be emphasized, again, are the community-based local struggles to develop communal activation and activism around health and public health, and some of them were described in the last session. The national health program work that we're involved in Physicians for a National Health Program and the National Movement for Single Payer is another very important struggle. And when you go around the country and see what's happened with the Occupy movement and the local spin-offs of the Occupy movement that have really been going on throughout the country, these are the kinds of actions that are actually very similar to Latin America, to the struggles in Latin America that have over time then coalesced with much more important outcomes. One of the very interesting things is that both in Latin America, as I was mentioning on Sunday. There are particular writings and actions that have been taken, for instance, by people within APHA and also the Occupy movement that have actually served as examples that people in Latin America, Greece, and elsewhere cite, that we tend to lose sight of out of, our experience of it's very difficult to accomplish these goals in the United States because of the false consciousness maintained by our media and also by repression that occurs periodically. But those are some, just brief responses. I think the real answers to those questions, though, depend on much more in-depth discussion that we can have and that we all can have in our communities and workplaces.